Arizona News Radio, a 62-year-old man who became stranded in a remote area of southeast Yavapai County, rescued after spending 3 days out there.
He stayed with the vehicle. He didn't roam away from the vehicle, and he kept his cell phone on, which allowed us to continue to track it.
Gary Smith was delivering flowers in Cave Creek. Phoenix police looking for three suspects of violent home invasion robbery.
They said that they wanted money and jewelry and stole some personal items.
A Northwest Arizona man arrested for shooting cows that were on his property.
This person's property was not fenced in, therefore the cattle had a right. They're protected by law to be on his property.
Students showed improvement in reading and math, but down in writing scores.
The writing scores may have gone down this year. I think in the long run, increasing the level of difficulty for the test will be a good thing for our students.
Andrew Lefevre from the Department of Education, Schwartz Tanner, Arizona News.
And this KFNX traffic report is brought to you by Cool Ace Air. Olive Avenue east of 59th Avenue has an accident. You are going to find some slight delays on the Red Mountain heading westbound between 52nd Street and 40th Street. You will find some slow traffic on the Superstition between Rural Road and Val Vista if you're heading eastbound. Air conditioner broken? Cool Ace employees are standing by 24 hours a day to promptly send their emergency response technicians. Call 602-COOL-ACE online at coolace.com.
Jim Howell from the KFNX Weather Center. Well, a bit drier, and that means no monsoon, at least here in the valley, for the next couple of afternoons. All storms confined to the far eastern part of the state. 101 to 104 valley highs through about Saturday. Then we pick more moisture up again Sunday and Monday. Jim Howell, KFNX News Talk Radio, 1100.
And currently at our downtown studios, we're sitting at 100 degrees. Next news in third dimension when it breaks here on KFNX News Talk Radio, 1100.
Could switching to Geico really save you 15% or more on car insurance? Is texting getting way out of hand? You know, I can't... Oh, please. Oh, that is funny. Where was I? Oh, yes, about texting. Pardon me. LOL, you are my BFF. So, like I was saying...
Switch to Geico now and you could save hundreds on your car insurance. For a free rate quote, visit geico.com to see how much you could save. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Here's another question from the Geico Savings Mailbag.
Bo from Atlanta writes, how do you deal with difficult people?
Well, I usually offer a helpful piece of advice. Like, did you know that Geico offers discounts just for being a good driver? And they're like, wow, you want to help me save money on my car insurance even though I'm pestering you? And I say, yeah, that's just the sort of bloke I am.
That's cool. So what do you say when people are really nice to you then?
Pretty much the same thing.
For a free rate quote, visit geico.com to see how much you could save. Geico, 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
This is Legalese, where the law is always on your side. Now introducing your host, a longtime veteran of the courts, Dennis Willinchek.
It's Wednesday, July 13th, and you're listening to Legalese. Your regular host, Dennis Willinchek, is out of town. I'm your host for today, Jack Willinchek. Today we'll be talking about Obamacare. I've got in studio here Bernie Hines, who's an expert in company employee health benefit plans. We're honored to have joining us, U.S. Representative Louis Gohmert from the state of Texas. Before we start, I just want to say, I don't know about you and the listening audience, but it bothers me that I might have to pay as much in health care insurance as a guy like Ryan Dunn. Call me crazy, but I think that I deserve some kind of a discount on my insurance for keeping toy cars out of my intestinal tract. There's a lot of parts of this law that bother me. Let me know if it bothers you, too. Feel free to call in and tell us what you think. Our number is 602-277-KFNX. That's 602-277-5369. Representative Gohmert, are you on the line?
Yes, I am. I sure am, Jack.
I understand that you're sponsoring a bill to repeal the Affordable Care Act. Is that right?
Yes, I am.
Can you explain to us?
We absolutely should. Well, the president promised that this would all be negotiated on C-SPAN, and instead what occurred was this was negotiated in back rooms. And you can just go through, Jack. And I've got the two volumes of this bill here with me, and I've been through it, I've tabbed it, and so I could go find things. But when you're talking about anything that's over 2,000 pages, you're talking about a lot of stuff that's hard to really grasp exactly what was done. But having been a judge, having negotiated deals, as an attorney, as a mediator, I knew that there were parts as I was reading through and went, oh, okay, there's the deal for the trial lawyers. Oh, there's the deal. That's why the American Hospital Association endorsed it. Ah, that's why the big pharmaceutical companies endorsed it. And you can go through and you can kind of find some of the things that you know must have been part of the deals that got endorsements from these different things. And you can also tell, because some of them are at polar opposites, some of the provisions that, oh, they did this deal with this group and didn't tell this other group and put them both in there. And, it's just a disaster. And the fact, let me tell you this too, I don't know if you're aware, but when I was trying to figure out how much costs were right now, we got the total number spent by the federal government on Medicare, Medicaid, divided it by the number of households in America, and it's over $10,000 on average from every household in America just to pay for the it's not quite a third of the households in America, right, that are on Medicare. And when you realize that, you realize, good grief, we'd be so much better off if we just bought health insurance for seniors, for those that, are on Medicare, or even households with Medicaid, both, and buy the high deductible, the catastrophic, because it's so much cheaper, and then just give them cash in a health savings account that covers the deductible. Fully covered. I spelled all this out to AARP as well. They sent representative. I said, now isn't that great? Seniors would never again have to buy supplemental. They'd have control of their own health care, and I was told, well, it's interesting. Let us think about it. What an idiot I was. I didn't realize AARP cleared more than $400 million in clear profit the year before from supplemental insurance. So, of course, they weren't going to go along with a deal that took care of seniors completely for a whole lot cheaper and gave them control. They had a vested interest. And when you go through, you can find AARP got deals in this. For example, every kind of insurance that's sold under this has like a 2% tax that has to be paid by the insurance, by whoever's profiting from the insurance, except for the kind that AARP sells. There is a prohibition against anybody considering executive pay beyond $500,000 and calling it business expense, except AARP got an exemption on that. I mean, you can go through and find these kind of deals throughout. All these different groups that endorsed it, they got some kind of deal in it.
Right.
And the only ones that didn't are the American public.
Right.
You know, as the old country song says, the American, the groups got the elevator and the American people got the shaft.
Well, you know that. Go ahead.
You can say,
no, go ahead.
One of the problems with the law is that most people don't really know what effects it's even going to have. I have heard a lot about waivers. I think you're going to say some more about that. I've heard that various organizations have been waived, from being applied, from having law applied to them.
Well, yes, you've got a neighboring state there where the former Speaker of the House got more waivers than anybody, and that's the person that did more to cram this down America's throat than anybody else, the Speaker, and yet she turns around and gets waivers for the cronies around her. And then, you've probably heard about the Anthony Weiner scandal, the
right
one where he was so adamant, so condemning of anybody that stood in the way of Obamacare, and then he turned around and was pushing to get New York City a waiver. To me, that's a real scandal.
Right, right. Well, you mentioned you were a judge before.
Yes.
So let me ask you about the ruling a couple weeks ago out of the Sixth Circuit on the Affordable Care Act that said that the act is constitutional. Let me get your take on that opinion. Do you think that's the right ruling?
I absolutely do not. If you look at some of the things that were said in that, it is like, yeah, we, in fact, one of the judges wrote, in essence, that, you know, we believe we have to follow the law of precedence and that the precedent dictates that we have to say this is okay, which is ridiculous. It was not appropriate under precedent. There is no precedent in U.S. history where anybody has ever been required under the Commerce Clause or any other clause to buy a product to protect themselves. Now, some have brought up the example, well, now, wait a minute. Every state requires that you buy car insurance, so that's not really true. Well, no, every state in the union requires you to buy car insurance to protect against others. Your damage to others. There is no state that requires you to buy insurance to protect yourself. It's only for damage you do to others. So this is a completely new thing, and I just was amazed at how the judges had their eyes turned by something that was said or done that caused them to say, well, this, we think we have to rule that it's okay. But, you know, we'll wait for the Supreme Court to rule, and they may well strike it down. This is, in essence, the attitude that I got from the opinion.
Right.
But it's not constitutional, and the Supreme Court ought to strike it down. And what's more, the $105 billion that we are spending, in the process of spending, to implement Obamacare should be stopped. And so I had somebody today here in Washington say, well, who are you not wanting to get paid? And I'm going, well, I want the people to get what they've been promised, except a good place to start would be the $105 billion that we're paying to implement Obamacare when we don't even know if it's constitutional. Any responsible individual, and particularly an adult, ought to say, you know what, until we get a ruling from the Supreme Court, we ought not to spend one more dime during this pressing time when money is so scarce for the federal government. But let's wait and get a ruling, and then we'll see if we should go ahead and spend the money.
Right. My impression of the court's ruling was that it talked a lot about the concept of rational basis, you know, which is the idea that judges shouldn't second-guess legislators. My impression is that they're just punting it the Supreme Court, which is probably just going to end up punting it back to the legislature.
I think that's a great analysis.
Yeah. So that, you know,
cut right to the chase, yes.
Yeah, and in other words, if you don't like the act, then you have to repeal it, and there's nothing else you can do.
Mm-hmm.
So that, I mean, clearly you're sponsoring a repeal of the act. You're pretty much the only hope there is, in all likelihood, for getting rid of it.
Well, and that's the thing. You know, I had originally thought that since it wasn't fully implemented until 2013, 2014, that a new president and hopefully a new majority in the Senate would be able to repeal it, sign the legislation, and stop it before it was implemented. But the trouble was this mandatory spending was put in place so that it is being spent to create the mechanism so that by the end of, by the time we get to January of 2013 and hopefully a new president, there may be such structure in place and so many private health insurers driven out of the business that, you know, the government has to say, well, everybody else is out of business. Looks like we'll have to take this over.
Right.
It needs to be stopped now.
Right. Okay, we're taking a break. When we come back, we're talking to U.S. Representative Louis Gohmert from the state of Texas. This is Jack Wilinchek on KFNX.
Since 1991, the law offices of Wilinchek & Bartness have provided quality business litigation service that you'd find at a big firm with small firm atmosphere. Wilinchek & Bartness specialize in cases of breach of contract, real estate litigation, construction defect, business fraud, and breach of fiduciary duty. For professional yet very personal legal representation, call Wilinchek & Bartness today at 602-606-2810, 602-606-2810.
Principal Offices, 15715 South 46th Street, Phoenix.
We have all heard of frivolous lawsuits, greedy lawyers, and a broken justice system. But what do honest people who have legitimate claims do to protect themselves when they have been seriously injured by a reckless driver? Hi, I'm attorney Mark Breyer, a certified specialist in injury and wrongful death law.
And I'm attorney Alexis Breyer. We're the husband and wife law team.
To help good people avoid making mistakes that will destroy their legitimate claims, Alexis and I have authored the Arizona Accident Book. The Arizona Accident Book details the hidden deadlines, tricks used to deny fair compensation, the process for recovering full reimbursement of medical bills and lost wages, and when you do or do not need to hire a lawyer.
Get your absolutely free copy for a limited time at ArizonaAccidentBook.com. That's ArizonaAccidentBook.com. Or call 602-240-5000. That's 602-240-5000.
Coming up this week on The Kevin Trudeau Show.
I'm Kevin Trudeau, The Kevin Trudeau Show, everything they don't want you to know about. This week, I have headlines you don't hear about in the mainstream media. Plus natural cures for better health and ways to have, be, or do everything and anything you ever will desire. Improve your physical, financial, and mental health today, The Kevin Trudeau Show.
Sundays from noon to 3 p.m. on News Talk Radio 1100, KFNX.
Welcome back to Legalese. This is your host, Jack Wilinchek. We have on the line talking with us today the U.S. Representative Louis Gohmert from the state of Texas. And our topic for today is Obamacare, or as it's, I guess, formally known, the Affordable Health Care Act. Before we went to the break, we were talking about just a couple weeks back the Court of Appeals for the Sixth Circuit held that the law is constitutional. Representative Gohmert thinks that was the wrong decision. There are a couple other things I want to ask you about, Representative Gohmert. You were in the news a lot before the law was passed. Saying that it violated the I want to get the language right. It violated the Hyde Amendment.
Yep.
Yeah. Which, in other words, it provides federal funding for abortions. Do you still believe that to be the case?
I don't believe it to be the case. I know it to be the case. But I'll tell you, the people that put this bill together, I'm telling you, Jack, these were not dumb people. I mean,
right.
These are really smart people. And with all the electronic searches that can be done of documents, like on page 119, if you put in the word abortion, you'd find page 119. And it talks about abortion and the service described in this clause, abortions for which expenditure of federal funds, the health department is not permitted. But if you went over, you would not find page 122.
Mm-hmm.
It wouldn't come up in a word search for abortion, because what it says is, Secretary shall assure that with respect to qualified health plans offered in any exchange established pursuant to this title, there's at least one such plan that provides coverage of services described in clauses little i1 and little 2i of subparagraph capital B. Well, you flip over. If you're just reading through, you go, well, that's interesting. But if you flip over, wait a minute, that's the provisions that talk about abortion. So you have to know to look for little I and little double I of subparagraph B of that section on page 119, or it won't pick it up in the word search. And so then when you go over into other places that provide for abortion, basically there's mandates. And so it is there. It is provided for. And, I really have appreciated and respected Bart Stupak over the years. And as a Democrat, he was standing firm against abortion being funded in this bill, but then in return for the president signing an executive order, which was basically meaningless, he was willing to change his vote. And I couldn't help but think of that line from Animal House where, and to paraphrase, the guy that wrecked Flounder's car, his brother's car, says, well, you messed up. You trusted me. You mess up when you trust somebody who is feeding you information that's not correct. I mean, just like the president saying this week, seniors you know, can't be guaranteed they'll get their checks. Well, we have had it again confirmed today by the Social Security actuary that for at least 3 years, if Congress did nothing to increase the debt ceiling, there is no danger to any Social Security recipient getting their checks. They will come. The only way a Social Security recipient would not get their checks is if President Obama or Timothy Geithner order that their checks not go out. Otherwise, they're going out. So it is scare tactics that this administration has been involved in, and it just irks me to no end to think about people, most vulnerable, elderly, or senior citizens that have worked so hard all these years, and then they have a president out there not standing up and saying, look, guys, calm down. It's going to be okay. Only thing we have to fear is fear itself. Instead of saying that, he's out there saying, seniors be scared to death. They're not going to let you get your checks. And it's just not honorable to do that
right.
when it's not the truth. And
well,
they did the same kind of tactics all the way through Obamacare bill being passed.
Right. Well, I guess on that same issue, let me bring back to the Hyde Amendment real quick.
Yeah, sure.
I understand there's almost 17 cases, I think, filed against the health care law, you know, across the United States. Have any of them raised that issue about, you know, whether or not the act violates the Hyde Amendment, provides funding for abortion?
That is a great question, and I do need to check on that. I know that it's been talked about, and people have looked at litigating that. And if I can check, will you be on tomorrow?
Wednesday.
Get the information back to you.
Sure. You can
get over
to my producer.
All right, we'll do that. That'd be great. And that's a great question, and I'd like to know the answer myself, so I'll check on that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have the act in front of me. I'm kind of curious to know exactly into what circumstances that funding for abortion is provided. You know, on the same note, since this act has been passed, I'm wondering if any funding has actually been provided.
Well, you can find a provision that does say abortions for which, this is the subtitle, abortions for which public funding is allowed, the services described in this clause, are abortions for which the expenditure of federal funds appropriated for the Department of Health and Human Services is permitted based on the laws in effect date is 6 months before the beginning of the plan year involved. There's a number of references, and I got this huge thing in front of me, and
I hate to make you do legal research.
Unlike most people, I actually did go through this. I delayed going through it because I went through the 1,000-page bill that was originally going to be the one we took up, and then I went through the 2,000-page, and then we had this monstrosity finally, and I put off doing it. But anyway, they're just, let's see, and I put my own tabs in here. Let's see, number of provisions. But one is we're providing federal funds to clinics that can provide abortions, and also there are policies that are required, as I mentioned, that must provide abortion services being covered, and there can be federal funds go to purchase those insurance policies, and so it certainly can fund abortion. So we'll
right.
see what happens in the courts.
Okay. Okay. I mean, it sounded like there was some kind of clause in there that says that it's at least, you know, ostensibly that the act isn't supposed to do anything that's not allowed to do, but
right.
you're saying there's definite potential there.
Oh, sure. Absolutely there is.
Okay.
Well, and since money is fungible, you can say we're going to give money to this clinic so that
right.
it'll take care of people's health care, but the money that we provide can't be used to fund abortion, but you're using federal money to keep the clinic going. And so, of course, it's fungible. It's going to be used for abortion. It's
fungible
money.
It's fungible, but it sounds to me like the provision of the law isn't specific enough that
That's
you can
right.
actually say that it's funding abortion.
Right. It doesn't actually say that. But, you know, where you require that policies provide for the procedure
right.
described in subparagraph little I and little 2I of subparagraph capital B that's requiring you to have insurance policies that provide for coverage of abortion.
Well, on the same point, if you were to raise that argument in a court of law, if you were to say that this law is against the Hyde Amendment because it funds abortion, would you agree that they'd probably strike that argument down?
No, I wouldn't agree to that. I think there are no.
But you just admitted to me that the law doesn't directly provide for any kind of funding to abortion. I mean, you must agree that that'd be a tough argument to make in a court of law.
Well, perhaps you weren't following me when I said you have to provide these policies that provide for abortion coverage, and when there is funding in the bill for clinics that will be providing abortions, then you are providing overhead that provides for abortions. You're making them possible.
In as much as you're just giving them money at all. And there's no direct provision there that supports funding for abortions in the law.
You're supporting a facility that's open to provide abortions.
Right, just by giving them money. I mean, the government gives them money for other reasons, too.
That's right. And if the federal government doesn't give them money, then there's no facility there to provide abortions.
Would you agree that a court of law would not find that this act violates the Hyde Amendment?
Well, again, you asked me that once, and my answer is still
personally,
no, I would not agree to that.
Even as a former judge of the Court of Appeals?
Yes, that's right.
Because
we'd have to look at all of the provisions in the health care bill.
Thanks.
And I'm not ready to agree to that because I think there's language.
Appreciate it. All right, I thank you so much, Representative Goldenberg, for your comments.
You.
It was great.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to come back here and right after the break, and we're going to continue talking about Obamacare. This is Jack Wilinchek on KFNX.
I'm Steve Malzberg. Listen to me from 1 to 3 every weekday afternoon on the 50,000-watt Voice of the Valley, KFNX, News Talk Radio 1100, Phoenix.
CNN Radio, I'm Jim Ribble. Tension at the White House. President Obama walked out of the debt ceiling talks this afternoon, reportedly telling House Republican leader Eric Cantor, "Don't call my bluff." Moody's Investors Service says it's considering downgrading the U.S. credit rating if Congress doesn't hurry up and resolve the debt ceiling debate. Some U.S. lawmakers are concerned that 9/11 terror victims had their phones hacked by reporters working for media baron Rupert Murdoch. This comes in the wake of the scandal over voicemail hacking in Britain. Senator Robert Menendez says U.S. authorities should team up with law enforcement overseas.
It seems to me that we should have a very clear ability to be working with Scotland Yard and determine whether Americans were pursued and particularly whether the families of 9/11 victims were pursued.
One of the jurors in the Casey Anthony murder trial, Jennifer Ford, tells CNN that things have been tough on her in the days following Anthony's acquittal.
It's just very stressful, and then, you know, you get anonymous letters from people that are hateful and nasty.
The most trusted name in news. This is CNN Radio.
Arizona News Radio, a 62-year-old man who became stranded in a remote area of southeast Yavapai County, rescued after spending 3 days out there.
He stayed with the vehicle. He didn't roam away from the vehicle, and he kept his cell phone on, which allowed us to continue to track it.
Gary Smith was delivering flowers in Cave Creek. Phoenix police looking for three suspects, a violent home invasion robbery.
They said that they wanted money and jewelry and stole some personal items.
A Northwest Arizona man arrested for shooting cows that were on his property.
This person's property was not fenced in. Therefore, the cattle had a right. They're protected by law to be on his property.
Students showed improvement in reading and math, but down in writing scores.
The writing scores may have gone down this year. I think in the long run, increasing the level of difficulty for the test will be a good thing for our students.
Andrew Lefevre from the Department of Education, George Tanner, Arizona News.
And this KFNX traffic report is brought to you by Cool Ace Air. You're going to find two house fires in the area of 27th Avenue north of Indian School Road. Bell Road east of 19th Avenue has a collision involving a motorcycle, and you will find some slow-and-go traffic on the Pima heading southbound between Shea Boulevard and McKellar's. Air conditioner broken? Cool Ace employees are standing by 24 hours a day. To promptly send their emergency response technicians, call 602-COOL-ACE online at coolace.com.
Jim Howell from the KFNX Weather Center. Well, a bit drier, and that means no monsoon, at least here in the valley, for the next couple of afternoons. All storms confined to the far eastern part of the state. 101 to 104 valley highs through about Saturday. Then we pick more moisture up again Sunday and Monday. Jim Howell, KFNX News Talk Radio, 1100.
And currently at our downtown studios. We're sitting at 100 degrees. Next news in 30 minutes. Everyone breaks here on KFNX News Talk Radio 1100.
It's All Business, the second Thursday of every month at the Home and Design Idea Center in Scottsdale. Raven Events hosts another great business-to-business mixer from 6 to 9 p.m. Just $10 at the door gets you admission, appetizers, two cocktails, and a night full of effective business connections. Communicate and collaborate the second Thursday at Raven's B2B Networking Mixer, 6 to 9 p.m. at the Home and Design Idea Center in Scottsdale. For details, visit ravenevents.com. It's All Business. That's ravenevents.com.
Hi folks, Jim Sears here for Legends Cadillac in North Scottsdale. I want to personally thank all our customers again for making us number one in the Western region. From California to Colorado, Legends outsold every other Cadillac dealer. Every month we restock our tremendous new vehicle inventory with SRXs, CTSs, and Escalades. Now folks, I promise you that when you visit Legends Cadillac, our professional and courteous sales staff will make your car shopping an exciting and an enjoyable experience. In fact, before you come down, check us out on DealerRater.com and find out what our customers have to say about us. As the 2011 model year winds down, GM has instituted great, great programs, rebates, incentives up to $10,000, loyalty rebates, as well as a non-GM conquest rebate. You know what? Legends has it all, from sales to an award-winning service department. Legends, it's like no place else in North Scottsdale or online at LegendsCadillac.com.
As a student and teacher of dance for more than 20 years, Chad's mission is to create a rich learning environment for the advancement of an art that can transform people's lives. Visit dancewithchad.com today and choose the dance class that best suits your lifestyle. Email us today. That's chad@dancewithchad.com. If you have a desire to learn how to dance and have an open mind, Chad can teach anyone, anywhere, anytime. Log on today. That's dancewithchad.com.
Welcome back to Legalese. I'm your host for today, Jack Wilinchek. Your regular host, Dennis Wilinchek, is on vacation. Today we're talking about Obamacare. We just had on the line Representative Louis Gohmert, who's sponsoring a repeal bill. We have in the studio here Bernie Hines, who's an expert on how the law affects employers.
Hi, Jack. How are you today?
Doing good. We also have on the phone Dr. Joseph Schertzer. Are you there, Dr. Joseph?
Yes, I am, if you can hear me.
I can hear you loud and clear. Dr. Joseph, I understand that your take on it is that, you previously or you still have a medical practice?
Oh, yes, I do.
Right. And not only that, but now that you're getting ready to retire and you're looking at how this will affect you personally.
I've been concerned about the way government has been involving itself in medical care probably since 1984.
Right.
As a physician and as a physician who's seeing how this affects patients firsthand, and through all administrations, Republican and Democratic administrations alike, we are having a real deterioration in the incentives that doctors bring to bear on medical care. And it's due to, unfortunately, due to financial concerns, probably stimulated on the part of the government that set the ball rolling when they instituted Medicare, ironically enough.
Right.
There's no rose without thorns, as they say. And while it's nice to be able to provide as much care as we can for everybody, there's a limit as to what society can afford, and that's the basic dilemma.
Right. Well, let me put this question out to my guests here. I tried asking, U.S. Representative Gohmert, just in essence, what the Affordable Health Care Act does, what parts of it have gone into effect. I think his response was, well, the thing's 2,000 pages long. You could go on all day about it. Let me just put this question out to the two of you. What are the most important provisions of the Act, especially ones that have already gone into effect?
Okay, well, let me try to field that. This is Bernie Hines. And basically, if we look at that from an employer perspective, the law is being phased in over a two-year period, and it'll take full effect in 2014. But with regard to employer-provided policies or policies that your listeners may have access to, essentially what the law does starting in 2014 is that it guarantees coverage to all comers. Anyone who wants to purchase a policy can do so through a health care exchange with no pre-existing condition limitations applicable. That's a major change in the way insurance in the past has operated. And it sort of goes hand in hand with one of the things that the representative was talking about, which was in order to be able to price for that and fund that, the law requires all individuals to have policies and be part of the system.
Right.
So that's a large change.
Right. One of the I mentioned it at the top of the show, one of the provisions in the Act that bothers me, and maybe I'm getting it wrong, is that my understanding is everybody will have to pay the same health insurance, you know, whether it's me, whether it's a guy like Ryan Dunn, you know, from MTV. It doesn't matter except for age groups. Is that right?
Yeah, basically what's the carriers are going to go to what's called community rating, and the discrepancy in rates is going to be relatively small. So you're right. You know, you're going to be paying a similar rate to older individuals, and in effect, younger people are going to be subsidizing older people because they'll be paying more than they need to in insurance premiums compared to what we have seen in the past. So there's going to be a narrowing in the rate bands, and you know, as I said earlier, there's a guarantee issue of coverage. So no matter what your health condition is, if you want to buy into the system, you can do so and receive a policy. So that will have a tendency to increase the cost in some cases of what you might have been paying in the past.
Right. Another part of the law is that there's penalties if you as a person don't buy health insurance. There's also penalties if the employer doesn't. Is that right?
Right. There's an incentive for employers to, or a requirement that employers of a certain size, if you have over 50 employees, you need to provide coverage to the employees. If you decline to do that, if you decide that you don't want to do that, then yeah, there is a penalty that you would pay as part of getting out of that requirement. Now the question is, you know, the cost of the penalty is in general quite a bit less than the cost of providing medical insurance.
Yeah, do you know around how much is the penalty? Do you know?
Basically, the penalty is $2,000 per employee, and you're exempt on paying the penalty for the first 30 employees. So let's say you have a group of 50 employees, you decide to decline to provide coverage, then you would pay a penalty based on $2,000 on 20 employees a year. So that's quite a bit less than the cost of providing coverage. It's not unusual for an individual policy for just an employee to cost around $4,500 to $5,000 per year. So there are some employers who are going to be looking at the possibility of just deciding to give employees additional cash, not pay for medical insurance on a traditional group basis, and then have employees go to an insurance exchange.
Right. Well, it seems to me if they do that, they'll be increasing the cost of the entire plan, of the entire act. I think I saw that the Congressional Budget Office was quoted. By the way, I think we have some interference on the line there. Joseph, maybe if you can turn your volume down or something. The Congressional Budget Office was quoted as saying that you know, the act isn't going to affect the deficit at all. But it did say that depending on whether or not employers decide to you know, pay that penalty, and in which case I think people are going to be forced to get private insurance, and I think that increases the cost of the entire act.
Well, and then keep in mind that there's a segment of the population where financially it'll make sense to get covered through the exchange, because a segment of the population is going to be eligible to receive significant subsidies from the government if they buy coverage through the healthcare exchange.
Yeah, tell me about that. Tell me about the subsidies. How does that work?
So, let's say for a family of four, the basic eligibility for subsidy is going to be based on whether or not your employer provides coverage. So if they don't provide coverage, you go to an exchange, and then you'd be eligible for a subsidy if your income is below 400% of the poverty level. So for a family of four, that would be right around $88,000 or $89,000 in income. If you're below that, you would be eligible to receive a subsidy toward the premium cost that you pay to the exchange, and that subsidy would come through the federal government, presumably. So that would represent an additional cost to the taxpayer that's not being paid now. I think that the counter side to that is that, well, we're going to be bringing more people into the system. We're going to be bringing healthy people in as well as sick people. That'll improve the quality of the pool, and that, essentially in the long run, it'll balance out.
Right.
So that remains to be seen how that's going to work.
Right. Joseph, let me ask your opinion on this. A lot of critics say the plan will follow a very familiar pattern seen since, Medicare in the 1960s. First, you extend a new entitlement without clear control mechanisms, and the result is just lots of spending, more damage to our deficit, which is already a mess. You were talking about how you've generally followed the way the government, has handled health care since Medicare in the 60s.
I agree with you and I'll be happy to respond, but how's the interference? Should I try changing
it? No, it's fine. Go ahead.
Okay. I was listening closely to the last speaker because I agree with what he said about how incentives are going to alter the medical marketplace. Personally, I think he has understated the deleterious effects of the plan. The plan seems structured to purposely shift population into a government-based system, accountable care organizations, however you'd like to name it. That's exactly how the incentives are structured intentionally. And the concern, and yes, it's true that if you have community rating, you're going to have a skewed payment schedule for various parts of the population, and it's inevitable that if someone doesn't have to buy insurance until they're sick, you keep altering the costs in an improper way, which is why the whole plan was structured theoretically by everyone paying into the system. And without that, it can't function. The actuaries were hoping that it would be universally paid for. And short of that mechanism, the plan falls apart. And I won't go into the belly dancing routine the government has done about whether it's a tax or a penalty, but it's a very interesting story in itself.
Right.
Besides those incentives, what's been going on for decades, and it's not just this plan that has created this problem, but doctors have been under the burden of disincentives towards providing care that are increasing exponentially, and that this plan will do that. Number one, they'll be spending much more time worrying about rules, regulations, fines, spending a lot more money and time on that, not
right.
focusing.
They already spend a lot of time and money on that.
But it's going to get worse.
Right.
And the disincentives to care aren't really appreciated, and that's not being it's not mentioned enough. Let me just give you one quick anecdote.
Mm-hmm.
Back in the early 60s, when Medicare was not yet implemented, a family doctor who was treating me told me something that I never forgot, even though I didn't understand it at the time. I was 17. And this old GP said they are trying to socialize medicine. It will destroy incentive. That was his concern. He was absolutely right on target. And I've seen a progressive disincentive to care among providers, doctors who I know and around the city. And this is going on across the country. It's universal. And that is one aspect that I find abhorrent about government intrusion in medical care.
Right.
We have potential fines thrown upon our heads for innocent errors, not just fraud,
right.
that are part of the problem. And having physicians focus on these things instead of that patient is the main issue in my book.
Right. Well, we're going to take a break here. When we come back, we'll finish up. We'll wrap up talking about Obamacare. This is Jack Willinchek on KFNX.
Since 1991, the law offices of Willinchek & Bartness have provided quality business litigation service that you'd find at a big firm with small firm atmosphere. Willinchek & Bartness specialize in cases of breach of contract, real estate litigation, construction defect, business fraud, and breach of fiduciary duty. For professional yet very personal legal representation, call Willinchek & Bartness today at 602-606-2810, 602-606-2810. When it comes to social networking sites like Facebook, you generally trust your kids but worry who they talk to online. Your kids want to be on social networks, but they don't realize the dangers that are lurking. So for you, the challenge is to find the right balance between monitoring to keep your child safe without invading their privacy. At Social Shield, we strike the right balance. We're like an antivirus system. We only alert you to problems as they happen, such as cyberbullying or stalking, so you don't have to spend hours reading all their wall posts. Social Shield's patent-pending alerts engine can see many things you can't as your child's Facebook friend. We'll alert you to suspicious persons and identify inappropriate posts and private messages being shared. We'll help you understand the risk your kids face on Facebook as well as other social networks. And unlike traditional parental control software, Social Shield connects directly with the social network so it can track all activity, regardless of which computer or phone your child is using. Social Shield allows you to give your kids freedom while providing the protection you demand for them. Visit socialshield.com or call 1-800-239-0120.
Arizona sports fans, this is Andy Dorf, host of Dorf on Sports, heard every Wednesday from 9 to 10 p.m. on KFNX Radio for my good friends, azcasino.com. Get dialed in with the online leader since 1997. That's GoTo Entertainment's azcasino.com. Call 888-333-PLAY now and mention Dorf on Sports for a $25 free play, a 25% cash bonus. That's 888-333-PLAY. That's GoTo Entertainment's azcasino.com. Any wager, any sport, anytime, azcasino.com.
Well, welcome back to Legalese. I'm your host, Jack Willinchek. Your regular host, Dennis Willinchek, is on vacation. We're wrapping up today talking about Obamacare, or, you know, the formal term is the Affordable Health Care Act. We're talking to Bernie Hines, who's an expert on how the law will affect employers, as well as Dr. Joseph Schertzer, who has a medical practice himself and is also planning on retiring soon and wondering about how this will affect him personally. Dr. Joseph, let me ask you, I think you're concerned that this would basically shut down your practice when it goes into effect. Can you explain how, maybe in some very, you know, how specifically that'll happen?
I wouldn't say that the law would shut me down. The question is, would I want to shut down the practice when certain parts of the law go into effect? For example, in about a year ago, our government placed into the system a mechanism that would allow it to claw back funds from physicians, basically take money out of physicians' bank accounts, if the nationally developed budget for medical care in a specific year was exceeded because doctors ordered more examinations, tests, x-rays, et cetera, than the government expected. I mentioned to you or someone else about a week ago that in Canada, when this went into effect, physicians came here in great numbers. I would not at all feel comfortable practicing if I would have no idea whether or not at the end of a fiscal year, where I had no money in that bank account, if a government would say, well, our budget was exceeded, doctor, you owe us $10,000, $20,000, God knows what. That's too great an unknown quantity for me to feel comfortable with. And that mechanism is in place. We do not know when it will go into effect, but there's no question they're going to do it. They wouldn't have taken the trouble to put it in place.
Right.
The other problem that exists, which has been increasing since 1990 or so, is the risk of fines for simple errors and not just fraud, no matter what some people may say. Fraud is not necessary for the government to fine you or the auditors to fine you.
Right.
For example, today I had an elderly patient set up as a new patient by her daughter, and we coded for a new patient office visit under that circumstance. By sheer accident, my assistant found that, in fact, she had an old chart, not quite 3 years old, meaning that according to insurance rules, she is not technically a new patient. If I had sent in a bill to the government, which I'm forced to do under Medicare, saying she was a new patient, I could face a $10,000 fine for that simple clerical error.
Right. You hear a lot of horror stories about that with, in employer laws. You do hear about that, where it's not even real. There's no commission of fraud. There's no intent to lie, but it's just...
And that is the fact.
Yeah.
As one gets older and is practiced for longer and longer, there's less tolerance for this kind of risk. I think it's just human nature.
Right.
So those are the sorts of things that are on any doctor's mind. And unfortunately, the doctors who are only in practice for a few years can't just say, if this goes into effect, I won't practice.
Right.
But it will have an effect on how they practice, for certain. The interest in dermatology, unfortunately, has been gearing more towards cosmetics, non-insurance reimbursement, for reasons like that. And it will bring down the quality of medical care. It is already having that effect.
Right.
And that's my main concern.
Well, yeah, I'd like to talk a little bit about that. Let me just say that if anybody listening wants to call in, the number is 602-277-KFNX. That's 602-277-5369. Yeah, that's the scariest and saddest thing about all of this, is that America, it's widely quoted, pays more than any other country in the world for its health services on just about any statistical measure, you know, whether it's per capita or just overall. And it has, you know, I wouldn't say the worst health care, but, you know, we're maybe a few steps of Mexico and somewhere below Cuba. Let me throw this question out to the two of you. Is there a better alternative? How would you, if you could change this act, what would you change? How would you make it better?
Just a couple of points quickly.
Yeah.
I'll take exception with the last statement. The statistics regarding quality of care need to be looked at very closely. And some of these statistics, such as America having a very poor infant mortality rate,
right,
are fallacious, because many of the countries that are compared to the USA don't consider a viable newborn if they die within several months of birth, for example. So we have to look carefully at these statistics, that they're not valid.
Okay.
I'll tell you one of the most important concerns I have regarding this bill, and it's this independent health board panel, what some have called, unfortunately with an inflammatory phrase, death panels. But there are plans for independent bodies, immune from judicial or congressional oversight, who will make decisions on a bureaucratic basis, statistical basis, about what care individuals get or are denied. And this distances medicine from the lawmakers or the decision makers to such an extent that the art and science of medicine are abrogated, unfortunately.
Right.
And that is anathema to me.
Right. Well, you would agree, though, that there is a basic problem here that the legislature needs to fix, namely that medical coverage is too expensive.
Absolutely. And what I would like to see, which I think would help solve a lot of the problems, are privatization of medical care. Again, if you have your oil changed in your car, you wouldn't expect insurance to cover it. If you go to a doctor once a year to say, let's just see if we have any skin cancers, perhaps that shouldn't be covered by insurance. Decisions about what is covered and what is not covered are one thing to think about. But if we had tax equity where everybody paid the same for health insurance, employer or individual alike, and if we could pay for most care out of pocket and have a high deductible, low premium catastrophic care for real insurance, there are a lot of people who feel that that would go a long way to decreasing the costs of medical care. And in my opinion, it would place the incentives back in the hands of the patient, who should be the payer. They can make the best decisions.
Okay. You were saying earlier that, you're concerned about how this act will affect you personally, too. Can you tell us more about that?
Those examples I gave you earlier are really the key concerns about my health care. I don't know whether or not this independent board will decide that should I get renal failure at age 65, whether or not I would be eligible for dialysis. The UK, that happens, I think it's in the 50s, at which point people are denied. But in the UK, you can at least obtain private insurance. Here, what the government is hoping to do is outlaw private care, and you would not then have the ability to obtain that medical care if this independent board excludes you from it on a bureaucratic statistical basis.
Yeah.
Under the Clinton plan, which is really the precursor of the Obama plan, private care paid for out of your own pocket would have been outlawed.
Right. Okay, well, that's going to wrap up our show for today. I want to thank our guests, U.S. Representative Louis Gohmert, Bernie Hines here in studio, and on the phone, Dr. Joseph Schertzer. Thank you so much, guys. We'll be back next week, Wednesday, same time, 4 o'clock. Check us out online at www.legaleseonline.com. That's legalese, L-E-G-A-L-E-S-E, online.com. Till next time.
Win a trip to Lake Powell. Hear the details on Healthy House Call Monday through Friday, 9 to 10 a.m. We give you the secrets to wellness, longevity, and abundant energy, helping you feel psyched up, tuned in, turn on a mega wired for sound. That's what I'm talking about.
Is it just me, or does it feel like we live on the surface of the sun? And keeping my home comfortable and not spending a fortune on utility bills seemed impossible. Well, that's until I met the folks at SafeWire Energy. They came to my home, did a free in-home energy evaluation, and explained how I could save 25% on my utility bills while utilizing the 2011 federal tax credit. What could be better? Don't go through one more hot summer without calling the energy experts at SafeWire. 855-SAFEWIRE for your free in-home energy evaluation. 855-SAFEWIRE.
My clients have personally called to thank me because they haven't lost any money in their annuities. In fact, many are earning nice returns right now. Hi, this is Steve Lance, author of Annuities, a 21st Century Pension Plan. If you're tired of stock market losses in your 401k or your investment accounts, my book is a roadmap on how to immediately stop the losses and quickly recover so you can enjoy the retirement you've planned for. You deserve some good news, so call me at 800-445-2516, 800-445-2516, or go to AskMrAnnuity.com and get your roadmap to retirement.
This is Arizona's News Talk Leader, KFNX 1100 Cave Creek, Phoenix.
News Talk Leader,
a division of Premier Radio Stations, LLC.